coming up on KUCB News. Russian bombers were intercepted near Alaska, and another conversation reflecting on the Aleutian campaign. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Tuesday, May 15th, 2018. This week we're sharing stories from the Battle of Attu and the Greater Aleutian Campaign of World War II. The conflict ended in the 1940s, but its legacy is still very much alive, both for the veterans who served and the Unungan people who were forced to leave during the fighting. Even now, many vets have never spoken to an evacuee, and vice versa. So, to commemorate what happened 75 years ago, KUCB invited people on both sides to sit down and reflect together. Today, we hear from Army veteran Paul Shaughnessy, who spent parts of World War II on ADAC, and Martin Oury, who was sent to Seattle after the bombing of Dutch Harbor. A note to listeners, one of the people in this story uses a word that is offensive for Japanese people.
I was 4.5 years old when they bombed Dutch Harbor. We were here when they bombed it. And
Remember that?
I remember it. Yeah. And I remember planes going over and the place is rocking and guns going off. And my brother ran outside, the older brother, he's 2 years older than I am, and came back in and said, told Mom, you know, Mommy, I see an airplane go over. I could see the man in it, you know.
Did he tell you it was Japanese?
He said it was Jap. My mother was notified to get one suitcase packed, and she had 25 to 30 minutes to be on board the ship that was in the harbor. The ship turned out to be a troop transport, President Fillmore. And we got on board her, and we ended up in Seattle.
You
were the lucky ones.
So. Yeah, I've heard since I've been here, this is for the veterans and the evacuees.
Right.
It's commemorating both of those. And you were technically an evacuee, but you went to Seattle.
The troop transport, I guess. That's where she was going, so that's where they took us. Luckily, we had relatives in Kent, Washington, which is just south of Seattle a little bit. And so we went to Kent for a year or so. And
you really get it kind of lucky that you had a place to go there.
Eventually, my father was still up here.
Yeah.
He got a hold of one of my uncles down there, an old Norwegian, Sverre was his name, and told him to find a house for us. And so Sverre found us a house by Green Lake in Seattle. And then my father paid him back for it when he finally came down after they got things going.
I got in the Army late and got up here in January 44 to ADAC. And my wife, she's an Aleutian veteran.
Mm.
I lost nothing by signing on for a year. That way, the regulation said you can't take your dependents with you unless you have a year of service or more. Well, bingo, I signed. I got a year so I could get my dependents. So my wife of 7 days and the rest is absentee 2 years. So I got her up and we lived in a Quonset hut on ADAC and had the kitchen and the bathroom and 2 bedrooms and then a big...
That was a big Quonset hut.
Well, yeah, it was a regular one.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were nice and tight and insulated and so forth. We had a year here. And people said, well, how can you 73 years now? What do you credit the... longevity of your marriage, and I've been thinking about it. That year on ADAC was the first year. She couldn't pick up the phone and say, "Mother, do you know what he said to me today?" You know, we had to work them out, and we did.
Yeah. I fished out of ADAC.
You did?
Yeah, king crabbed out of ADAC.
And that reminds me of a story. We had these guys go out, not only hunting crab at the right time, but they had geese. And then we'd have a nice eat, different than army food, you know. Well, we hadn't had any like Alaskan Department inspection, and so we did have a guy from the headquarters, you know, this inspection team's coming out, and they're giving us the inspection, and the guys had been out on hunting and had geese, you know. And we had Captain Buck Slaughter from Virginia, and the Colonel.
Is that a real name now?
Yeah.
Kind of like Daniel Boone, huh?
No. It's Buck Slaughter. That was it. So the inspector goes to the mess hall, opens up the refrigerator, and there are these geese all hanging there. And he says, "Captain, don't you know that's against the regulations of the Alaskan Department to be hunting out here?" And Buck Slaughter, fast thinking, he says, "Well, sir, Colonel," he says, "you know, we got these willy-waws out here. And these geese were flying by, and that willy-waw hit them and bashed them up against the mess hall. And my good mess sergeant here, he grabbed them and had some of his men dress them and put them in the refrigerator." That colonel shook his head, slowly closed the door, and I'm sure he said, "Anybody that comes up with a story that fast, it deserves not to be gigged forever." So that was the last time we heard about the geese in the refrigerator.
Those imperial geese, those come from Japan, so you were shooting Japanese geese.
Oh, good for us.
Yeah. No, I shot a bunch of them and took them home. We dressed them and took them home. I put them in the blast freezer, you know. And took them home, and I couldn't give them away. They were so dry.
Oh, well.
Fishy taste. So we've got some very common interests, you know. I didn't know it till, you know, now we're talking about war and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've had a lot of, you know, a lot of things in life I really treasure, you might say, you know. Yeah. And I'm sure you have Paul, too. So.
Oh, I've had...
This is one of them here right now, that's you know, right, talking
that's right,
with
that's
him.
Right.
This story was produced by KUCB's Zoe Sobel and Laura Craigle. Join us tomorrow for our final conversation between two descendants of veterans and evacuees. You can also find all our coverage at KUCB.org. The military says it intercepted two Russian long-range bombers in the airspace near Alaska on Friday. The Air Force Times reports that officials with the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, said the incident took place over international waters north of the Aleutian Chain. F-22 Raptor fighter jets were dispatched from Alaska to intercept the Russian Tu-95 Bear bombers, which never entered actual U.S. airspace and were escorted away without any problems. Such incidents are routine in the airspace around Alaska. There were multiple interceptions last summer after a lull in 2016. Elsewhere around the globe this year, U.S. planes were escorted away by Russian aircraft in the Black Sea region. While there is nothing illegal about the probing flights, the tactic is seen as a mild provocation and way of testing an adversary's air defense response capabilities. At its most northern point, China is hundreds of miles away from the Arctic Circle, but its leaders want a say in how the region is governed. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, China's first-ever national policy on the Arctic reveals expansive ambitions in the far north.
This is from China's Government Information Office as it announced the new policy.
China is determined to better know the Arctic, protect the Arctic, utilize the Arctic, and participate in the governance of the Arctic.
The policy says China will cooperate with others on development in the region, including new shipping routes it calls a Polar Silk Road, after the ancient trade routes connecting China to Europe. New Zealand professor Anne Marie Brady says this is the first white paper China has ever issued for a region outside its own territory, and it demonstrates the country's growing assertiveness in global affairs.
China is stepping into the power vacuum of global leadership since the Trump administration came to power, and it's preparing to shape the new world order.
Brady spoke at a forum organized by the Wilson Center, a Washington, D.C. think tank. Another participant, Robert Daly of the Kissinger Institute, says it's natural for China to play a major role in the Arctic, particularly when it comes to science, trade, and financing. But he says the big question is how other countries are going to react. Daly says the Chinese policy uses certain phrases like the shared future of mankind to portray itself as a benevolent force interested only in economic globalization.
But note that the last sentence of this important document reads like this: China will advance Arctic-related cooperation under the Belt and Road Initiative. That's about as important as a preposition can be in this world. Under the Belt and Road Initiative.
Belt and Road is the banner for how China wants to expand its influence around the world. It's a global development policy Chinese President Xi Jinping announced in 2013. Daly says extending that China-centric policy to the Arctic isn't a good idea.
China's participation can be welcomed within existing frameworks, but this notion that China will lead it under Belt and Road has to be resisted, rejected, countered.
China is not brand new to the region. It's had observer status at the Arctic Council since 2013. The country has one polar icebreaker and is building a second. And it's a major investor in Russia's Yamal liquefied natural gas facility. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.